Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Pisgah Podcast.
We are your hosts. I'm Drew, that's the Mangler, and we're coming to you live from beside a roll of sailcloth. So, Mangler, what are some news items this week?
Well, first up, we've got a burn ban in the region, and it's a little smoky out there. Depending on when and where you're at, it could be more or less. We got a good-sized fire on the northeast side of Hendersonville. That's the Poplar Fire, if you've possibly seen the news. And a smaller fire popped up on the southwest side of DuPont, which closed Cascade Lake Road, Cascade Loop Trail, and Sheep Mountain Trail and Road. Both these fires do have some good percentages of containment, so hopefully things can simmer down some.
And further to our west is a much larger fire, the Collette Ridge Fire, just east of Murphy, outside of Andrews, North Carolina. There's not a lot of mountain bike trails out there, but there's a good bit of recreating, so go ahead and check on those areas that might be closed before you head out there.
Yeah, and moving towards some more bike-related news. Dude, some big news from over on the Tennessee side of the mountain. Aaron Gwynn bought Windrock Bike Park. Pretty crazy. What most people might not realize is, no, Aaron did not buy Windrock as a whole. That's much, much larger. Aaron bought the bike park operations. His wife, Lauren, is going to be running the show over there for the most part, which pretty awesome. Both of them have a lot of experience in the bike industry, so we're all excited to see their spin on Windrock. Had a nice little phone conversation with Sean Leader a couple of weeks ago. He was pretty psyched on it, on the direction they're going, and just kind of how everything's been shaking out. So we're excited for Windrock.
Heck yeah, we're super excited for Windrock. And, you know, there might be some cool new changes to the park. There might not be, but either way, like, you can go ride one of the most iconic North American downhill racers bike parks now. And it's just a 2.5 hour drive from Asheville here, guys. So, you know, I think that only good things can come from this.
Drew, I might have to argue with something on that. Gwynn is probably one of the most iconic downhill racers.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I guess I shouldn't just cordon him off to North America. But, you know, us English-speaking North Americans, he's definitely the person that we've looked up to for the past decade and a half here.
And we're psyched to have him running a bike park just on the other side of the mountain there. Well, leaf season has officially started. You know, last episode I said it was pretty minimal and kind of been falling at a slow pace. Well, that all changed when we had that little freeze snap last week and the wind picked up. And down came literally like all the leaves, all of them. So super deep everywhere, all the zones. However, if you want to try to get some leaf blown stuff, you've got Canoga and Rock Creek are doing a pretty good job of keeping the trails clear, and also Chestnut Mountain.
Yeah, and it's also freeze-thaw season. We've got a couple evenings here that have dipped down into the 20s. Luckily, or maybe unluckily, there's little to no moisture to speak of, so there hasn't been any dirt damage from it. But just be aware on those early AM rides as the sun comes up.
Oh, speaking of seasons, it's officially night ride season. Time change this past weekend has us dark an hour earlier and diminishing until winter solstice. So keep those lights charged for those after work rides.
That's right. And Chestnut Mountain just keeps pumping them out. They have opened yet another trail called Sunburst. It's a green, fun, and flowy trail. It's very loose and dry right now because of, well, you know, how dry it is.
Yeah. At this rate, they're kind of opening a new trail every time we drop an episode. But yeah, I rode it the day it opened, and I can confirm it is fun and flowy, but very loose and dry. So whenever we do get some rain, it'll really help out with that trail. It's in a pretty good spot. It's about a third of the way up the climb from Burn Park, and you'll see where it exits on your way up. But nice little add-on if you're doing a Union Lady Bird or Champion lap.
Right on. In upcoming events this week at Canoga, there will be an Enduro Southeast race. The park has said they will be open, although some of the trails will be closed and no bike rentals will be available over the weekend.
You know, I think I might try and sneak in a party train with the B team on at least one stage over the weekend.
So what's the B team, Mangler?
Well, They're slowly taking over as they migrate down from the Metro DC area, probably the rowdiest but utmost law-abiding group in the USA. Well, also, we have Upstate Sorbus Cranksgiving happening here in a few weeks over at Rock Creek, November 17th to the 19th. They'll have Joey J doing skills workshops at the Riveter and Canoga, a single and two-day enduro, a downhill race, an alley cat, which is happening in Traveler's Rest because we know that there's not much of an alley cat to be done in Zirconia. The event I'm most psyched about is the Tiny Bike Downhill, where you'll be racing on small bikes, wheels no larger than 20 inches. So, sounds fun. I kind of wish it was 16 or 18 inch wheels, but we'll make it work.
Well, make it work. I guess you'll have to. Rock Creek's going to be a great shakeup from Canoga, where it's been hosted in the past few years, and Paris Mountain in years before that. But small bikes and 20 inch wheels are subjective. You're over 6 foot, and I'm not. A 20 inch wheel bike might not be a tiny bike for me.
That's true.
But this weekend is also the Swank 65 and the Couch Potato for those trying to ride in the Hatchery area. Just be aware that a sold-out event is going on, and hopefully the traffic beds in the leaf litter and gets those trails clean.
Ooh, good point. This Thursday, it's coming Thursday, November 9th, I will be at the Hub for a show and tell on packing your bike for air travel. You know, lots of people have asked me why we haven't done a podcast episode on it. And well, the main reason is that because that stuff can just change so quickly. And honestly, I kind of don't want to blow it up. There's been instances of, quote, travel hacks making the rounds on the internet. And most of it's just general experience stuff. But sometimes it can get a lot of attention. And airlines have been known to change rules because of it. But it's mostly just more of a visual thing and kind of a Q&A session. So come out. Learn something, and maybe we can hit a nighttime leaf surfing sesh afterwards.
Sounds good. I think you still have my bike bag. I've got to get that back from you here in a couple weeks.
Yep.
But you're certainly the right person for that presentation, and I'd be curious to contrast your experience to a pro that travels for the purpose of racing versus going on a vacation to a place to ride.
Yeah, it's definitely a big difference between like a recreational trip to go riding versus like a privateer or even someone like Nico, where honestly most of the big pros just sometimes they don't even travel with anything. Maybe they're shock or a spring, but for the most part, there's going to be some differences in what one needs to bring for traveling on a bike trip for racing or recreating. So I'll have to think about that, and I'll throw some notes in the presentation for some tips on that one. So if you're a racer, come out.
Cool. I like it.
All right. So we, or more or less I, have hyped up us having some great content in the can. Well, this episode's been simmering for a minute. You know, despite its length, it was more of an experimentation on sound gathering for me to record some interviews and document a process over a couple of hours. So that basically turns into over 4 hours of audio to go through and whittle down to tell you all the story of Rockgeist and how Greg Hardy brought it to life and what the creation of a custom bike bag is like from us for you. And so when you got your new tall boy earlier this year, it was kind of your wishes to make that thing like a long range weapon stocked with all the necessities for hours of fun cycle biking adventure. So it needed a bag, and our local bag company, Rockgeist, was the perfect target.
That's right. This one, we got started back in March, and one reason that we've kept this one in the bag, so to speak, for a while, was to give the product some time under use. So here it is.
This is like the place.
Sign says so.
Welcome, guys.
Hi.
Hey, how are
you? Hey, guys. How's it going?
Thanks. Yeah. Well, welcome to the shop.
We want to get started here?
Yeah, let's do it.
So let's get this bike in our stand.
Do I need to take the bottle cage off or anything like that?
So do you want the bag bolted to the bottle bolts?
Yeah, so kind of what I'm thinking is there's a lot of storage in here inside. Mm-hmm. The frame.
Mm-hmm.
I imagined it either being bolted there or something that went here. One of the two. I don't know which.
Gotcha. Let's get it loaded up and we'll talk it through. It sounds like we could bolt it if you wanted to.
Yeah, I think for that point of contact, it makes the most sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah, we can do that. So yeah, then we will need the cage off. What else did you want in the bag? Were you envisioning it filling the entire space of the frame?
Yeah, so the reason why I built this bike is to have something for longer days in the woods.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm looking at, you know, 4 or 5 hour rides on this bike. So I'm thinking a place to put clothes, a dry pair of socks, plenty of snacks. I've got all of my spare tools and flat protection stuff in the glove box of the down tube, so I don't need room for those things. And for those kinds of rides, I'm probably also gonna have a pack because of water, you know?
Would you wanna carry the water in the frame or on your back?
I would prefer to not have anything on my back, but if you have options for water storage in that would be pretty slick.
Yeah, I mean, so it's a bladder, right? So you would pop a bladder in there and then run the hose out of the nose.
Uh-huh.
And just kind of anchor the hose on your cockpit somewhere.
Right.
That's typically how we do with the frame bag, because you are going to obviously lose the bottle location.
Right.
Yeah.
I like that. I think that putting a bladder in there is...
There's really nothing different. We have to build the bag to accommodate that bladder for this bike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not going to put any dividers in it because it's so small. It's just going to be one big compartment.
Yeah.
And you kind of fill it how it is. The nice thing with your crank here, if you were to run your crank up, to see how the bag isn't in that space.
Right.
So if it does get a little wider with the bladder, it's not going to touch the crank, and it's probably not going to touch your leg. That's going to be like your ankle and calf.
Sure.
Here.
Yeah.
And of course, this bike has some great fat tubing to work with, which always helps.
Yeah, right.
So very good. All right, so Tim is just going to, he has your bolts exposed, so we can see that in our photo fit. Tim is going to then tape the ruler to your top tube, and that's going to give us some context when we pull it into the computer, when we scale things. And then we're just going to grab your photo. Yeah, so this process we do all the time for people that are local and they come into the shop. And they want to have that conversation we just had,
mm-hmm.
especially with fabrics as well. We have a ton of fabrics, but majority of our business, people are just emailing these photos to us.
Right.
So they're taking them at home, and then we're just using that as the next step down the process. So, but it's always good to get people some face time with the locals, and we can get those photos shot pretty quick. But if you were to do this at home, you're doing the same thing I'm doing here. Mm-hmm. I'm just about 10, 15 feet away from the bike. The ruler's on the top tube, bolts are exposed, I'm looking level at the frame, and so my shot is like dead on center.
Yeah.
And so we have like that piece of white paper in the back, just kind of helps see the bolts pop with the chaos of the workshop behind it.
Yeah, right.
But it's really it. It's not a complicated process at all.
Yeah, I mean, that's about as simple as you could make that.
So I'm going to take this photo and just get into the computer, and then we'll start the build from there.
Cool.
Yeah.
So Greg, thanks for welcoming us here into the shop today. Sorry to come in and just like completely disturb everybody's workflow.
Oh, happy to have you guys.
So tell us a little bit about Rock Ice. We've heard it mentioned from Logan Watts in past interviews. We see you guys popping up on social media, partnering up with Gravello for group rides. You're definitely invested in the community of Western North Carolina and bike packing in general. So kind of give us some backstory.
Yeah, so our workshop is just north of downtown Asheville in Woodfin on the river. We've been making custom frame bags and bike packing gear for about 6 years in this location, and then a few years prior in Winston-Salem from my apartment.
I noticed that on one of your email signatures it had PhD.
Yep.
So you have a doctorate of something, so what is that?
Yeah, it's in material science, and then with a focus on vaccine design.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, and then hence that's why I worked at Cook Medical. I did a lot of biomedical research and medical device design with them.
You go from having like working in some high-end medical field to creating Rock Iced
bikes. Yeah. I started sewing when I was in grad school. I had a lot of free time in grad school, and I traveled a bunch. Studying and working, and so that kind of opened the door was also exposed to the benefit of having autonomy, controlling my own research, and just kind of didn't really have a job for like 6 years while I was in grad school. And so once I started working at Cook Medical, it was definitely a different lifestyle for me, you know, having a cubicle and a computer, and you know, I got to be at work at 7:30, leave at 4:30 exactly. And so that was definitely a hard transition for me. And eventually I kind of parted ways with that lifestyle and just focus on growing Rockgeist.
It's interesting to hear you say you were in grad school and had all this time, where I have some friends that were in grad school that were just getting like hammered.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely fortunate because it's very specific to what like lab you work in and your professor that you work under. Mine was definitely a little bit more hands-off than, you know, some of my peers.
Yeah. What led to the creation of a Rockgeist?
So yeah, I was exploring just long trips on a bike, not really knowing what bike packing was until I was doing it. You know, I first started with a hiking backpack and just kind of going out and just doing a few overnights with that. And it's a painful way to bike pack, but it definitely gets enough to get you out, and it got me hooked.
Where were you riding at?
Basically local. I was in Durham, and I was doing some local stuff in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. But my first official trip was in Switzerland. I was in there for a conference. I had a few extra days before I flew home and did an alpine route in the Swiss Alps for a few nights.
That's making the most out of a quote work trip. That's usually my plan as well.
Exactly, right. Yeah, definitely the perk of travel and grad school.
Got you psyched on doing some longer rides. And then when did you really start to apply your educational knowledge into this field?
Yeah, I mean, doing research is kind of very, very analytical, and you're kind of intentional and deliberate with decisions and how to make stuff. And when I was in grad school, I was doing a lot of like design work for medical devices. And so the process is very similar, whether you're designing, you know, a body part or a bike bag. You know, you have to go through kind of the critical thinking of that. And I like to, you know, take it maybe things a little too far and enjoy the technical components of construction of anything. And so it definitely satisfied my need to make something and create and build stuff. And when I can apply that to a passion like such as bikepacking, it's a win-win.
When would you say you first launched Rockgeist?
Probably in 2015.
Okay.
Yeah, that was like, I had an LLC at that point.
So you launched it pretty shortly thereafter.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It was a quick transition for me. I was doing a lot of stuff. My first sales were on eBay. I would make stuff and put it up on eBay, and then a website came, and then you know, I was doing like a template that sold hotel rooms, right? And I was adapting it to bike bags. And then one of my customers was in web development and got me a real website, you know? And so it kind of snowballed after that. And then pretty much my entire time in Winston, I'm working at Cook Medical, I was sewing on the side, you know, for friends and a few customers.
And then what was your move like to the Asheville area?
Yeah, I mean, I was quit my job and I rented this space we're in right now. It was just me working here and a lot less machines, a lot less
you
stuff.
Had a lot of room for activities then.
Yeah. And yeah, then that's when Eric Weber was my first hire here. He came in and as a customer and saw what I was doing and trying to build, and graciously offered his help.
Was there a point where you think that you would say Rockgeist kind of really kind of blew up?
Slow and steady would be how I would describe it. You know, for the work we do, it's not like, you know, we're not mass producing stuff, right? And so it doesn't really take much business to keep us, you know, afloat, profitable, and busy. And it's a niche market, obviously. And so it's not, you know, like a household item that everybody is going to be in the market for. Even with like trail riders, not everybody would want our bags and gear, right? So it definitely is a niche industry and market. But yeah, we've definitely grown over the years. I mean, it started with just me, and I think at its peak, we've had about 10 people employed. Right now, we're just slightly under that at 8. It's kind of in that window of 8 to 10 people.
Okay. I feel like that's like a good comfortable size for a small business.
It is. And especially, I never started this company to be a huge, you know, I'm not like a business person. And employing in that realm of 8 to 10 people is pretty manageable for me. Anything more than that, it becomes almost just like a manager and kind of takes away from why I started the business in the first place.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep it small and intimate and just, you know, keep doing your thing.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
You've got a lot of different offerings for bike packing and bike bags. We came in today because Drew got his new Santa Cruz Tallboy and wanted to experiment with having a bag made for it. But you guys have lots of other cool stuff going on with some readily available bags that I think anybody could benefit from having on their bike. So kind of talk about your product line a little bit.
So we specialize in custom work, meaning like we make it to order. You know, so we have customers that will build their bag online, submit their order, and then we make it. And so that's definitely like half of our business is that custom frame bag work. The other half of the business is universal gear, and this is gear that will fit almost any type of bike or riding style. You know, top tube bags, feed bags, hip packs, and we have two lines of our universal stuff. One that's sewn, meaning like we're taking a needle and thread and constructing it that way. And then the second one is welded, where it doesn't use any needles, and it's fully 100% waterproof. And so that's the difference there. Both universal fit, so they're going to work with almost everybody and every bike.
Okay, cool. And how is, in that answer you mentioned, half the business is custom, half the business is pre-made stuff. Does it break down like that sales-wise?
Yeah, I mean, the revenue is pretty split between the two product lines, which is kind of intentional because doing custom work, it needs some balance.
Yeah.
You know, it's definitely a different way to make stuff. We love to do it, obviously, but it's very time-intensive, can be tedious, and it's not really scalable. There's kind of a ceiling of how much you can scale that type of work. Whereas a universal line, it's built differently, it's prepped differently, and it's a little bit easier to scale, and it's easier for us. Different profit margins are involved in that type of bag. It gets us out in bike shops. You know, we can have, you know, local shops carry our universal stuff, where like they couldn't really carry our custom line.
All right. So do you have a trip date coming up?
I don't.
So my name is Tim Bateman, and I am the customer service rep for Rock Guys, but I also wear many, many hats around here. We've already got your photo fit, so I'm gonna mark that off, and we're gonna do like a full triangular bag inside of there. Okay, and do you have a fabric in mind or a color, durability, weight?
I don't know anything about these types of fabrics at all. So, I mean, I'd like to have something somewhat color coordinated, but I'm not even super picky about that.
We have lots of options. Probably some of our most common fabrics that we use is gonna be the VX series, X-Pack.
Through your custom offerings, with Drew going through his options for his bag, we were presented with a lot of different options as far as materials and, you know, color samples, stuff like that. So talk to us a little bit briefly about how you make selections on materials for doing bags.
Yeah, we want to offer advanced materials, high quality materials that you might not see with mass produced gear. The benefit of some of this technical fabric is, you know, we don't have to order a huge amount of it to offer it. So we can order, you know, stuff in the realm of 10 to 100 yards of this stuff and then, you know, price it appropriately. But a lot of it is the cooler kind of ultralight durable stuff is made out of Ultra PE. And that's kind of what the household name of Dyneema comes from, right? That's the Dyneema fabrics, even that's like a brand name. And so we offer that for people who are looking for that type of bag. And it's just, and of course, and then we can customize it. And so we can not only build it to meet the shape of their bikes, but also include the features that they want.
All right, so back to Drew's bag progress. It's time to let Tim loose on Drew and fire out all of those questions.
I'm trying to think of what would like go with that. Like we have
blue's
like this
bright.
Bahama blue. It's pretty kind of bright. And then we have some some heavier weight, heavier duty. These three guys or four guys right here are some of our heaviest fabrics.
I don't think I'll need anything that heavy duty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty. And then these are our recycled fabrics, which are sourced pretty close to home.
What's that purple behind it?
Let's see, that bluebell.
See what that looks like beside it?
Yeah.
I like the idea of using kind of a local recycled fabric.
Yeah.
Definitely appeals to me. Maybe the blue before that one would probably be.
And the ocean blue.
I like that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so Drew, that fabric is, like, the bottles are actually processed in North Carolina, and they process that into yarn.
Uh-huh.
And then they weave it here. It gets shipped up to Connecticut, where they laminate it, and they ship it back to us. We make our bag.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Keeping it pretty close to home.
Yeah, a lot of the recycled fabric is made overseas, right? And so the environmental cost of recycled fabric can be super high in some cases.
It's recycled, but the carbon footprint of getting it here is much, yeah.
So we're super stoked about this line from XPAC. It's called the RX series, and it's a lot of the core colors we make our universal bags and we keep in stock.
Right. Yeah, it feels like a proper choice.
And it's obviously good. It's waterproof. It holds stitches really well. It's a good choice. Good balance of weight and durability.
After nailing down fabric choices, even more options are presented. I guess this is the beauty of making a custom bag, right?
As far as the options, you and Greg talked about doing the bolt-on down here. So you have your bolts exposed. So I'm going to mark that down to bolt on the down tube. Obviously, seat tube, top tube, we're not worried about that. Zipper map pocket. So we'll have your drive side, which is always going to be your main compartment. On the opposite side, we have, this is a zipper pocket here where you can put thinner stuff. A lot of folks will have that if they have thin stuff they want to carry, like a map or cell phone or
fits
whatever.
Fits the Pisgah Mapco map size.
Yeah, fits it perfect. Yep. So that is an option to have in there, and that would be on that non-drive side. On the inside of loops, we have an option of doing what we call hang loops. Let's see if this one has a set of hang loops. So we put like a little daisy chain inside. It's usually like a short section. And then we have these Velcro tabs, and then you can hang. Like I like it on my bag because I put my pump up there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of folks like it. It works great for tent poles, stuff like that. Stuff that's going to be long and skinny and something you want to isolate in the bag.
I like the idea, but I can't think of what I would use that for.
Okay.
Because I've got pump. The pump is in here, so.
Right, right.
I don't need that.
Okay.
But it's a very neat option for sure.
Well, it's something we can put in there and then you can use it or not. Like if the situation arises, you're like, oh, I'm super psyched that I have this. Like now I can just throw some Velcro in it.
Right.
And lash something to it. So yeah, and it doesn't really add a bunch of weight to the bag. It's just a section of a daisy chain that goes in there.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Gets sewn to the spine. When you guys were talking about attaching to the top tube, you're thinking Velcro or you want to do a lace-up?
I think lace-up will actually work fine because what I'm imagining is if you have to unsnap, and unsnap can just swing it to the side to get in here.
For sure. Okay.
Because it's a straight top tube. It doesn't have any curves or bends to it that would make that cumbersome.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and it's a nice, secure way. We definitely recommend it for folks that are going to leave the bag on the bike. Mm-hmm. Like if you're taking it on and off, if you're like swapping it between bikes, you might want to do more of a Velcro, but yeah, I think laces would be really nice on that.
So Tim, let me ask you, in terms of bag complexity, have we thrown you a curveball here or?
It's a pretty straightforward bag. A lot of full suspension bikes take a lot of work around, but this has a nice triangle we can work with it. Mm-hmm. So it's gonna be awesome. Yeah, I think that pretty much covers it.
What fabric are we working with?
We're in ocean blue.
Ocean blue.
Yeah.
All right, so while Tim was running Drew through the ringer, Greg was off doing computer stuff with the photos he took of Drew's bike to make his bag template so that once we were done making important life choices on bag construction, Greg can then pass the template off to Lucy Crusell.
Sweet. So I just transferred your order to the template here. So Lucy knows exactly what to make on it. It's a pretty simple build. I'm going to mark her bolts here, and then we're going to add a strap here. So we can do a strap that's going to be like about 3/4 inch wide, and it's made out of webbing. Mm-hmm. Or we can do a 2-inch piece of Velcro, and then you have like a mating side, you know, hard and soft. This is going to touch the frame less, and for this size bike, this is what I would recommend. But if you have preference for Velcro, we can certainly add that in.
I think the webbing would both look better,
yeah,
aesthetically, and be cleaner.
It's definitely cleaner, yeah. And you can protect that frame with some helicopter tape, and you just use less of it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we'll do that. We call that a cam buckle. And then, so now, I'm just going to draw some zipper lines for you. Yeah. So Lucy, I don't know if you saw the bike or not, but there's no tube here, so we're not going to connect on this edge, but we're going to add our zip pull.
Cool. Yeah, this part is pretty straightforward.
Yeah, now to this. This is the...
We just want to make sure we have, you know, room for the seam allowance. Mm-hmm.
So what Lucy is doing here, this is the distinction between a mass-produced bag and a handmade bag, right? This is the slowest part of the entire process that mass-produced bags are just clicked out, or, you know, they're made in the same shape, same size. And so you see a lot of, which we do for our universal gear, but I don't know if you're too familiar with like kind of like efficient cutting. This is a wing for our waterproof hip pack, mm-hmm. right? It's the same shape for that particular size. We don't mess with it. So we just stamp this out with a hydraulic press.
Oh, okay. I was imagining a hammer situation there.
Yeah, well, not too far off. It's like a 2-ton of force. It just kind of like smashes this down. And of course it cuts like 10 to 30 layers depending on the fabric.
Oh, so you're doing multiple layers at one time.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
So like this, we have to cut out by hand because it's just a very unique shape and we're just making one.
Are you getting a matte pocket for this?
Yeah, we did talk about the matte pocket. I do think that that would be
okay.
A preferable feature.
Cool. Yeah. Sorry, the shapes give you a runaround because
you're looking
at
it backwards.
Sometimes this would be the top, you know, and you could. There's, yeah, just room for error.
Yeah.
There's my line.
It's always different when you're talking through what you're doing, right? It's.
Yeah, trying to avoid mistakes, but. Greg is such a great business owner when it comes to mistakes. You're very understanding. Yeah, so then we'll get zippers, which...
So our zippers are our YKK and they're molded teeth. I'm sure you've seen some bags that have like that coil tooth. It's a very fine zipper. Grab one. Yeah, it might look like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that's a coil. This is a great zipper for smaller bags, but with this, the larger frame bag that gets a lot of use, it gets really dirty. We found the molded teeth is much bigger and much more durable and should last the life of the bag.
Is this one going to be a 2.75 spine or a 3, you think?
We'll do a 3-inch for this, yep.
Cool. Yeah, this is a fairly simple bag, like in the sense that it doesn't have all the other accoutrements, so it shouldn't take too long. But yeah, we're just gonna prep the zippers first. It's easy to forget something because every bag is different. So
yeah.
I just like to like pull out all the pieces when I begin.
The bill of materials. So
yeah, speak. Exactly. Yeah. In this case, because we're doing two zippers, it basically became four pieces that are coming together. You know, like this one is gonna be five because it's three zippers. But ultimately, we're building panels right now, so we're just gonna create the non-drive side and the drive side, attaching the zippers, and then we're going to make sure that both sides are identical to each other, because otherwise the bag never turns out quite right. So, yeah, so right now I'm just building the panels, meaning putting the pieces together, and then we're gonna top stitch it, which is, you know, it's an aesthetic piece, but it's also functional, just keeps everything like flush. So once you build the two panels, then you'll add all of the attachment pieces, so the way that it's gonna connect to the bike. And then put a spine on it and make it 3D. So those are the basic phases.
And the hardest part is making the bag 3D. That's the, yeah. You can do it well. There's a spectrum of how great that turns out. Yeah. And that's the moment of a good bag versus a okay bag.
Even just looking at this piece here, I mean, you can see how crisp the edges are. Mm-hmm. And that goes a long way.
Okay, let's see if you like this. You get to see the color. What do you think?
I don't see any red in it, hardly at all. I think it looks great. Is every bag start to finish like this with one person kind of following it through, or?
No, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff. I can kind of take you through that process. So if you were to come in, all right, so Tim would take your photo, upload it to the computer. Jen or Laura would do the template. Eric or Tim would then cut it out and put it in a bag and give it to Lucy or Laura or me. They would sew it, get it so it's 3D, give it back to Tim. Tim would bind it, put foam in it, plastic in it, flip it, and then ship it.
Okay.
So it touches really almost everybody in the shop, with the exception of probably Greg. Clemmer does.
Oh, Greg preps our spines and stuff.
That's true, yeah. So he'll do a lot of the sub-assemblies.
Okay.
Yeah. But Greg does a lot of our, or actually all of our universal gear. So that's like, you know, the honey pots, the top two bags, the saddle bags, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
We're going really fast, but how long would you say a bag from start to finish takes, Greg, you think?
Michael asked me that in an email. I was like, actually, I'm not quite sure. I mean, they're all so different.
2 to 3, though, maybe?
Maybe 2 to 3 hours per bag. We keep track of, like, how many we do, but if you get, like, half-frame bags, fill faster than full-frame bags. And so that time can change pretty much. And if you make a mistake and you have to start over, that could double the time.
Yeah, really kind of surprised with, I thought that part was going to take roughly that.
Yeah, Drew, that template process, when I first started, the gold standard was to mail in, customer would mail in a cardboard tracing of their frame. And you kind of envision all the problems that comes with.
Yeah, depth of different tubing and...
Right.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of it was like, it's almost like they gave it to their five-year-old kid and sent in a crayon drawing of a, like, cereal boxes taped together type thing. And then once we moved to photos, so Rock Ice and then another company, Rogue Panda, we were the kind of the two companies that get in front of the photo process early on. And then now that's the standard, right? And so all custom work, a lot of custom work is done by photo now.
I feel like even with the, you know, the inaccuracy of tracing a piece of cardboard, I feel like any inaccuracy in the photo could be scaled easier.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to be as jittery, perhaps.
Right. Yeah. I think. And a lot of the time, like the tubing, you know, like your tubing is very square, whereas like this demo bike here is, the amount the bag touches is a lot different. And that comes in effect of how we make the frame bag fit. It's never really, the cardboard way, you're relying on the customer. The customer dictates their fit, which is not the best scenario.
I can imagine the OCD of certain people when it comes to making things line up and stitching. And I mean, I don't have a flannel shirt that the lines match up when I button it, you know?
So, I mean, that's the thing, like, we have a really small team, but everybody here is really good at their job. And it's tough to find the right people to do this work. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason why there's no big companies that do this custom work.
You know, yeah,
like, it's really like people dependent. You know, like Lucy's skill set she has, there's not many people in the world can do what she does. It's a very specific line of work.
Was textile or sewing or any of this what you were doing before here?
Yeah, industrial sewing. I've always been interested in sewing. I love repair. So I've always, been interested in, like, how do you deconstruct something? So, aka, how is it made? Definitely sewing, making. I still think it's amazing that, and I think a lot of people don't realize that, like, clothes, there isn't like any garment, I believe, that can be completely made by robots. You know, like, there's all these human hands involved. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that blows my mind.
Yeah, that is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think that's a huge thing that Rock Guys prides itself on too, is that we fix stuff that a lot of it has been pretty beaten, mm-hmm. you know? My name is Lucy Kriesel, and I sew the custom frame bags here, mostly. My grandma taught me to sew, and then I kind of took it from there. As far as professionally, I've taught mending classes at libraries and help people figure out how to use their sewing machines. That's just really important to me because I was once very frustrated with bobbins and threading and how they worked. And once I figured that out and could be kind of zen with a sewing machine, I wanted to share that with other people. I worked for another company regionally and taught industrial sewing, so helped people kind of just learn the basics of a machine. So no matter where they went, they could go from there and make whatever they wanted to with it. So I think it's a really important skill. I don't think it's a dying art, like some people say, or a lost art, but just has different applications in this day and age. Yeah, the bag is now 3D, inside out, and just adding your hang loops. And then we're just gonna bind the raw edges just to make sure everything is like contained. Won't go anywhere. Isn't that wild?
Yeah. Wonder how many people know what the inside of their bag looks like.
I know, we wonder that, but try not to think about it too much. some of us are perfectionists, like there's things I'd like to go back and change, but. yes, and I'm just gonna go bind the edges and then pass it off to Tim, if that's okay.
Sure thing.
Nice. We use the lighters a lot just to make sure the little frays are, you know, contained. And I guess I think of it as, it just ensures the longevity of the bag. You know, nothing's gonna come out. Seems really silly to talk about, but we recently were gifted these really nice Bic lighters by Greg, and they work better than the last lighters we had, so. Yeah, they're an important tool.
Got to use name brand lighters.
Those dollar store ones. In this case, they make a difference, yeah. This is fun. You're really making all parts of the bag making feel very exciting, even the binding.
Well, I mean, honestly, when I was looking at it, you know, talking about binding the edges, I wasn't imagining this. And those raw edges on the inside is just kind of what I imagined the inside of a bag would look like.
Yeah.
Didn't even consider that was a part of it.
You could get away with that too. I mean, our clothes, you know, if you look in there, a lot of them don't have, you know, maybe they're serged, but they don't have like an edge, because it does take time, but I think it makes a little bit more refined.
More professional.
Yeah. We want them to last too, so. All right, my friend.
All right.
Shouldn't be too complicated. This is Drew's bag, local pickup.
Nice.
Lucy, this looks a little bit funny, but I think it's right. Yeah, thank you.
This is a step we call foam and flip. Basically, what I do is I go through and just double check for any like random little threads that need to be like chopped down just a little bit and burnt. Like we like to go through the bag and make sure like nothing's gonna come unraveled or anything like that. So I'm kind of like the final step of this bag's life before it goes on to the bike. So it's final inspection, and then I'm gonna take and insert some foam. And sometimes we also do like a little plastic stiffener, which I'm gonna see how this looks once we get it, the foam in there, but it gives a little extra stiffness.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a pretty simple process. We have some pre-cut foam that we use. And then I just take some like air quotes measurements, which is inserting our little inserter stick in there.
Yeah, I don't see any inches or centimeters on that.
No, no, it's very precise. And then we cut that foam. And I'm gonna sandwich it because it's a nice fit, snug fit inside that sleeve. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna trim that down, square that edge off a little bit. And then this piece, we kind of mash between this little stiffener and then just insert that foam inside of there. Everything's looking nice and clean, good structure. All our corners are turned properly. Gonna go in and add some zipper pulls. We got our cam buckle going on up above our bolt-on section. Give it a little bit extra stability on top. So now I'm just gonna lace it up just like a shoe, using this cordage to go through our little tabs here.
Is it just the same as lacing shoes, crisscross applesauce?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you could get, if you're a sneakerhead, you probably have some, you know, some secret way to do some fancy lacing, but typically we just do the regular crisscross. Another recommendation I think we would have for this bag, especially since it's, you know, mountain bike and super muddy in Pisgah, I would recommend doing helicopter tape to protect the frame, like all the way around, like wherever this is gonna connect. It's just another layer of protection for your frame, and it gives a little more grip to it. It's got a little bit of, you know, almost like semi-rubbery. So it gives a nice little grip to that and keeps it nice in place.
Even standing, 10 feet away here, 5 feet away, the pink or magenta.
Yeah, it's a nice
stitching.
Yeah, it's sharp.
With that blue, it does look really good.
All right, I've got it laced up. Put a cam lock on there. There you go.
Looks great. I'm
Bag
super impressed.
Alive.
I didn't realize it was going to happen this fast, too.
Yeah, neither did I.
Yeah, it came out super nice.
Yeah. I mean, I mostly chose the fabric because it was the recycled stuff, but it works super good with it.
I've studied and looked at bike bags a little bit, but seeing one go through the process, there's a lot that goes into it. There's a lot of attention to detail that we saw you guys putting into the construction of a bag.
Mm-hmm.
How did you kind of like start formulating this to try to be as efficient and put together a good polished product?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely try to be innovative in what we do. And that, on the customer facing element of innovation, it's function for people, right?
Like, totally,
it's a new bag that does something different, right? It's a different way to attach to the bike, or it holds a new object. That's one element of being innovative. But for us, being a small company, we also have to be pretty innovative in how we build these bags, because we're trying to be profitable. We're trying to scale it to a certain extent. And so the processes behind the scenes are just as important to us as the finished product.
One thing I think Rockgeist has going for you guys is you guys participate in the activity of bike packing. You are the ones that are putting these bags to the test, figuring out what works, what doesn't. How has that process been? Like, have you had some major failures in the field where your like bag just blows up or something like that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it certainly happens. I mean, the fact that we're passionate about the sport definitely helps sustain some of the headaches of running a small business and all that. But it's great for us because, we test stuff firsthand. We're obviously open to feedback from our customers, and that's a huge element of improving. For sure. But it's also nice that we're using all our products. Everybody who works here at least rides a bike, and you know, some people are more more passionate about camping, but that's the other half of bike packing, right? And mm-hmm. So bikes and camping, getting out in the woods, it definitely drives our business in more ways than one.
Not only are you guys like passionate about that, but you're trying to be open and welcoming to new users, and you know, offering stuff online such as route guides and suggestions, and then through your like rental and tryout program.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, I think we're one of the only manufacturers that does a rental program and has routes for people to ride. Because for us, we are motivated by growing our sport and getting people out on the trail, and having someone who's maybe a trail rider try bike packing for the first time, or a hiker who's comfortable camping but not so much on the bike, getting them out on the trail. It's a great way to see a lot of trail in a short amount of time. You know, and that's really the draw to the sport for us. Like a good example is like the Arizona Trail. It could take a few months to hike that.
Oh yeah.
You know, and 10 days to bike it. And so that's something that's more possible for a lot of Americans who are working. You know, they get 2 weeks of vacation a year, and really trying to squeeze the most out of that.
That's a good point to make, is like, you know, how to help you have the most bang for your buck as far as like seeing nature.
Right. And it's not like, you know, a lot of hikers might say, well, riding a bike is a lot faster than hiking, which is true, but it doesn't have to be, you know, like, yeah. If you're familiar with elevation and terrain, like you're going to be hiking your bike while bike packing.
Yeah.
It's just part of the deal. And you can go as fast or slow as you want.
Yeah. And I've been on parts of the Arizona Trail, and, you know, me just riding it as like an afternoon mountain bike ride versus not a loaded down mountain bike.
You know? Mm-hmm.
Huge difference when trying to clean some of those technical climbs and stuff.
Yeah, 30 pounds of gear can definitely change the bike handling.
Oh, yeah. You know, we mentioned you having some local guides on the website for routes and stuff like that, and seems like a lot of those are more like East Coast and Southeast oriented.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, and that's just simply because that's our home turf, right?
Yeah.
It's easy for us to see these places in person, to document them. And you know, we try to do a good job getting a good photo set for each route. And it's also nice because we're kind of, you need some knowledge before you show up to bike pack. You got to know where to park, all those details of, you know, maybe where to find water and food. And so getting out and riding them ourselves really makes the publishing part of those routes easy for us.
And it adds like another level thing, like another reason to go do a route is like, oh, let's go document this route. Let's set up a good guide for it so we can share it to our new potential customers.
And what you're talking about earlier, like trying to grow the sport and like offering it to the community, it's like we also want to present a wide range of choices, like so for terms of if you're a beginner versus advanced bike packer. And so we have a few that are 30 miles long, but like a really great camp spot where it's not hard to do, and you're not going to feel intimidated to go out and try this bike packing for the first time. And of course, if you come to the shop in person, we can outfit your bike with rental gear. So it kind of lowers that barrier of high cost to get into the sport, you know, purchasing a full kit. You can instead rent one for really cheap.
And if someone that's more single track oriented, which most of our listeners are more single track oriented, what's kind of like a good setup? If someone came here to the shop and was wanting to outfit their bike, kind of what would that look like?
Yeah. So for a full suspension bike, and a saddlebag and a front harness are probably the two most useful for that kind of bike. Now, of course, if you have a dropper post, you maybe won't be able to use that dropper if you have a large bag. You know, we do have smaller bags that can accommodate droppers. It's our gondola saddlebag, but there's different options. And of course, the front harness is where you would carry your sleeping kit. So your sleeping bag, a pad, and then you can also add accessory feed bags for food and water.
Drew had his custom bag made, and lots of mountain bikes have various different triangles, if they even have like a full triangle. Like some of the Ibises are like, and Rebel has like the top and bottom sections. And for someone like myself who rides an XL, it gives me even more benefit to have a potentially bigger triangle bag.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's something for people to keep in mind is like outfitting their bikes.
Right. And so, a frame bag is obviously helpful, but I wouldn't say it's required to start. Right. Yeah. Like it's
like what you said when you first started, you're just wearing a camping backpack.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and maybe that on-body carrying is a fanny pack or even your hiking backpack. It's enough to get out. And obviously it won't take that many trips for you to kind of move away from that, because it is definitely a different level of discomfort with something on your back. But the frame bag, it's nice because the weight is low. It keeps the handling of the bike more conserved for how it's naturally meant to be.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a great place to carry water, heavy stuff, like, and obviously your repair kit, you need all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, assuming a lot of your listeners are local to the Asheville Brevard area, I definitely want to encourage people to pop in and say hi. And if you have some questions about outfitting your bike or just general bike packing questions, we're more than happy to talk with you. And we're also looking to expand our route library. And so if you know of a great camp spot, you want to link up to some trails that you want to get published and share some overnight routes, we're all ears. We're trying to make our local region as accessible as possible for bike packers. And so please shoot us an email. You can reach us at bikepack@rockgeist.com.
Okay, cool. I've got a couple of routes that I've been toying with, like mentioned to Logan and probably mm-hmm. you as well for some other zones. And you know, that user-generated content is cool, and it can help unlock some areas that, you know, generally don't get a lot of traffic.
Right. Yeah, especially with bike packing, you can access areas you might not typically go to on a day ride.
Yeah.
And so that's the kind of the cool part. It's you know, you might have a local trail system that is ridden in a different way than you normally would.
You know, going out and doing a sub 24 is pretty easy to do. Like, you don't have to have like the craziest setup. You can just go do it.
Right. Especially in North Carolina with how great the weather is almost year round. It's not like you really need a lot, especially in the summertime.
Yeah.
So
a good filter and some snacks.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you guys have a pretty good social presence, a good social media presence. So what's the best way for people to link up with you on that side of things?
For sure, yeah. Our Instagram handle is just @rockgeist. That's @rockgeist. And then, of course, Facebook is the same handle. And the other is our website, you know, rockgeist.com. Phone number's at the top in the banner. Give us a ring and happy to chat.
And you can look you guys up on YouTube to find the drone aerial view of how to find your door.
Yeah, it's a bit of a maze at the mill here. But yeah, we do have a YouTube channel. We're trying to expand more with videos. A lot of it's going to be like product-based videos of like how to set up our gear. There's a lot of nuances that can kind of help accelerate people getting gear onto their bikes a little bit faster and better. And so, yeah, you can stay tuned for that.
Right on. Well, cool. We're looking forward to it. Maybe we'll have to get out in the woods sometime.
Thank you, Michael.
All right, Drew. So it's been about 7 months now. I've done a couple of rides with you where this bag has been present. Some it's not been on your bike, but you know, those are been like some shorter trail rides. So talk to us. What's it been like?
Well, as you heard when we first were doing the photos of the frame for the bag, I was concerned about water storage. I did have to give up the water bottle cage, but from that, I actually gained a space that fits two bottles. I can fit one full-size 24-ouncer and one 20-ouncer. And then I have plenty of room for a Sawyer filter, snacks, a place to put my wind shell, easy access to my phone for trailside pics.
You don't take pics.
Well, but if I did,
yeah,
called out. But I don't think I'll ever have a short travel bike without this kind of storage on it again. I use the frame tape under critical contact points, but there are a few spots where it's rubbed. It's nothing major. It's just worth noting. One thing I will say is I decided to go with the laced attachment on the top tube, which does look best, and it's seemingly the most resistant to movement. But this is one thing that I think if I had to do it all over again, I would choose differently. If you need to take the bag off to wash your bike after a dirty ride, and you do this often, it's just better to go with Velcro or an easier to remove option. The unlacing and relacing isn't as quick and easy, and you kind of have to pay attention to what you're doing as you're putting it back together versus just strapping it on. But if you're going to keep it on full time and it's going to be more of a fair weather, less dirty bike, then I would still recommend going with the laced attachment. All in all, it's a pretty minor thing. It has stayed together very well with no signs of wear. One thing, it's been on the bike rack of my car getting aggressively rained on for about a 5-hour drive at one point. And there was really only like the slightest bit of moisture inside, even though the fabric on the outside looked saturated. And since owning this bag, I've paid more attention to other commercially available bags and other layouts. And I have to say that these Rockgeist bags are definitely far superior to the off-the-shelf options that you can buy. And they're on par, if not better, than any of the other custom options that I have seen. So if you are a Pisgah Podcast listener, then these are your peers and the obvious option to support.
From us spending time there, hanging out with everyone, watching the process, it got me really psyched on supporting them more. Unfortunately, right when I got my tall boy, I got a custom bag made from another company out in Colorado. Similar scenario of like sending them a photo with a tape measure and stuff like that. Bag came out fine for what it is, but I just wish I'd have went with Rockgeist. And probably the main reason why I didn't at that time is because they had such a large turnaround time. I think they were quoting 12 to 14 weeks or something at that time. And Bedrock, who made the bag I have now for my tall boy, I think they got it to me in 3 weeks. So for me at that time, that was what made me make my decision. But I do regret it. My bag's been fine. I haven't used it that much, really. I probably should use it more. I've got a new frame idea mulling around. And when I pull the trigger on that, the first place I'm taking that frame is the Rockgeist to get a bag made.
It'd be really cool to see what they do for that frame because it actually has a very compact front triangle. I'll be curious to see what happens with that.
Yeah, as will I, if that happens. But so far, it's in the works. But I'm psyched on what Rockgeist is doing. I really like supporting our local people. If you've got any questions, like Greg said, give them a call. Swing by. They're open to that stuff, you know?
It's definitely a great group of people. I really enjoyed the experience working with them, and I'm sure that anybody listening will as well. All right, so it's been dry. It's been cold at night, warm in the day. What's the weather looking like for the coming week?
Well, the rest of this week is very much like that. Warm in the day, cooler at night. However, we do have some potential precipitation in the forecast for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. However, it is very minimal, and it would do nothing but help the trails, and I wish it were a little more. Actually, I wish it were a lot more, because what a lot of these wildfires are dealing with right now is how it's been so dry, the fire is basically burning underground, and so all that duff is just like dry fuel and it needs to get wet. But looking at the weather for Fletcher, Friday shows some light showers all day with a accumulation of a tenth of an inch. And then Saturday morning, a 100th of an inch. And then Sunday morning, 3/100ths of an inch. So not a lot. Kind of Sunday night, we cool down a lot more with lows getting into the low 30s and the highs hitting the mid to low 50s. But then after that, there's not much precipitation on the forecast, but the humidity is a little bit higher, which could help. So that's kind of where we're sitting at right now. That's where we're at. Wish I could say there was more rain coming.
All right, everybody, get out there and do your rain dances. Our life depends on it.
Yeah, it kind of does. Well, guys, that is a wrap on this week's episode. And as always, you can find us poking around on social media, swiping and tapping. So just search Pisgah Podcast. We've got the web store going with shirts, and we've got fresh bottles on the store now. Yes, Pisgah Podcast / Mangler Mixer Orange Collab bottles to make your bike pop with the lack of color in the woods we have now. So yeah, check that out, pisgahpodcast.bigcartel.com.
And if you have bags full of water bottles strapped to your bike, then click subscribe. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Back episodes can be found there, here or on Spotify, and or your favorite podcatcher. Buy some Pisgah Podcast merch to support the show.
Well, Drew, I guess we need to start figuring out doing some night rides.
Yeah, night rides, and I do have one small thing that I have to admit is I still haven't taken that tall boy on a ride longer than 3.5 hours.
I was going to ask you if you had a ride, but I didn't.
Yeah, thanks for respecting my dark secret.
There we go.